Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, Mike Bond, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter. And I wish I could be starting this episode off with a little bit higher energy for you all, but unfortunately, this has been a very tough time right now. Just found out, as I'm sure maybe some of you have seen on my social media or elsewhere, a very good friend of mine, longtime MMA journalist, and one of the true MMA OGs, Jordan Breen, unfortunately, tragically passed away over the weekend. Heartbreaking news. Jordan's a very good friend of mine. We became really close when he moved to Toronto in the mid-2010s. Obviously, a lot of similar passions with mixed martial arts and the fight game and everything. And in about 2019, he had to move back to Halifax to take care of his father after his mother had passed away. And from there, it seemed like things just kind of started to decline from him in terms of mental health issues and some addiction issues. And I know a lot of people were kind of trying to keep in touch with him, see how he's doing. And slowly the communication just dropped off as, you know, things started to seem to unwind in his life a little bit. We did our best to try to offer him support, came to the point where I couldn't really communicate with him by any means. The phone numbers, the emails, all that stuff kind of stopped working. And it got to the point actually where last year I tried to reach out to the police department there in Halifax just to see if, you know, he was still with us and anywhere they could track him down. And about a week later, I got a call back from them saying that I had actually found him and that he was seemingly doing okay. They couldn't give any more information than that due to privacy laws in the province. And, you know, they gave him my information and said he would reach out if he so choose. And unfortunately, didn't hear from him beyond that and then learn of this news over the weekend. And just a devastating loss, not only personally, but to the MMA community. Jordan was literally one of the smartest MMA minds I've ever come across. He forgot more about the sport than I will ever learn or retain or remember. Truly insane. I remember sitting there watching fights with him at my apartment. He was looking at his computer, typing messages on Twitter, not even looking at a fight that was currently happening. And then he would go on the Sherdog Radio post-fight shows and he'd break down that fight that I was certain he did not watch a second of in incredible detail, technique-wise, storyline-wise, and everything. It was truly some magical stuff and something I've never seen from anyone since and probably won't see since in this industry. Just a really hard day. But I know Jordan, and through the friendship we had, he would still want me to do a show for you guys here to kick off UFC 316 Fight Week. And what better way to honor one of the greatest MMA minds in existence than by having one of the other greatest MMA minds in existence on the show to break down all things UFC 316. So the UFC, former UFC bantamweight champion, former WEC bantamweight champion, future UFC Hall of Famer Dominic Cruz will be making his debut on the Bonfire to break down everything from Sean O'Malley to Mirab Davalishvili to Juliana Pena versus Kayla Harrison and the debut of Patchy Mix. A lot going on at UFC 316 this weekend and could not have found a better guest for so, one of Jordan's favorite fighters. So what better way to make the show in honor of the great Jordan Breen than to have Dominic Cruz here breaking down UFC 316, that top of the card. So I love you, Jordan. I miss you. This was a tough one. I got the news about 10 minutes before me and Dominic were supposed to record. So I apologize if my energy or my focus maybe isn't there on the same way, but also grateful to Dominic because I needed that about 35 minutes of distraction he gave me today. So please sit back, enjoy, think of Jordan while we are breaking all this down. Keep him in your memories and all his family and friends and everything. I'll miss you, buddy. This one's for you. I will take a quick break and be right back with Dominic Cruz. We are back here on the Bonfire with a first-time guest of the program, a man I've been waiting patiently to have on for the right time, Dominic. I think I've had every member of the broadcast crew on the show so far, but you are the one I've been waiting for. How are you doing, man?
Man, glad to be here. Let's talk. Let's get to it. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
For sure. No, thank you for being here. And before we get into UFC 316 this weekend, I think you made your retirement announcement. It's like 4 months ago this week, pretty much. How's the past 4 months been? Does it feel like it's been that long?
Yeah. You know, 90 days, the more I feel, you know, you always hear the 90 day number for a reason, because I'm just past that and things just really start to sink in. Just not being in the competition pool and not being randomly drug tested at every turn, everywhere you go and every turn of your life, you know, is different. Just that alone, because you have to put your whereabouts every single place you go all the time. And I travel a lot. So even just that little change in life is interesting.
Yeah, seriously. I can't even imagine. What about just being like completely removed from the idea of competition? Does it give you like a certain degree of peace now, not even like having that thought lingering somewhere?
Definitely. It's exactly what it feels like. Yeah. I mean, it made me realize why guys retire and then why they return. Because, and it's also a reason why I didn't want to do it. I could feel that retiring would give me almost like a break, right? Like you get to step outside of the competition pool and just do what I'm doing now, which is relax, truly relax, because you don't have somebody breathing down your neck. So I wanted to stay in that and keep my foot on the pedal until it was done. Because to me, retiring and then coming back is almost like a cop-out. You know, you kind of pull yourself out of it. You give yourself a break while everybody stays in the competition pool. And so I'm glad I just stayed in it until I got everything out. And, you know, unfortunately, I didn't get that last fight, obviously. So respect to Rob Font for showing up and getting his job done. But your body does what it wants to do.
Yeah, for sure. Has this changed like your perspective at all as you've gone back to work, you know, on the desk and the booth and everything, like being completely out now? Because I think there's no more active fighters left to commentate in that booth. You were the last one. Has that altered how you either view the fights or call the fights or digest and analyze them?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like even looking back and realizing like there's times I could have retired and gotten a break and just take a deep breath and then jump and then maybe jump back in. But, you know, even when I was injured, instead of retiring, I stayed in it, and that kept, you know, the competition, people calling me out, people, you know, liking me, disliking me. It just keeps you in it. And looking back at that, it's like, huh, that's interesting. Like it makes me understand like why certain guys retire. It just relieves the pressure. You're just outside of everything for a period of time. So being in that place now where I'm not in the competition pool, when guys aren't going to be calling me out when I'm calling fights, that's different. You know, you're calling a guy's fight, you're patting him on his back for every single thing he's doing and telling the world, from my perspective, how good they are and like why they're great. And then they go, yeah, and I want to kick your ass. And you're like, I get it. Like, it's not like you can't understand, but it is a different, it's a crazy change. When that happens, I'm in the competition pool, it feels different than when I'm not. Now if that happens, oh, okay, he just doesn't like me, you know, get in line. But when I'm in the competition pool, it's like, okay, how's this going to go? Like, or is this a future matchup? Like you just think of it totally different. So yeah, it's weird being in the competition pool and calling fights for over 10 years. I was doing that for over a decade, calling fights while I was competing, and then now not competing and calling fights. It's more fun. It's fun always. I enjoy it, but it's more fun without skin in the game.
Yeah. And you strike me as the type, like you're never going to be completely removed from, you know, going in and doing some training and kind of seeing like what's going on around the scene. But is that important to kind of keep yourself at least somewhat involved, like in the gyms, to see, you know, like the cutting edge of technique, what people are working on game plan wise, and just like be there through the evolution of what's going to come in the sport, even though you're no longer going to be active and trying to implement those things yourself?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, is like, when you're a fighter like I am, I started in this sport before it was legal anywhere in the United States. I was fighting on Indian reservations in a lot. And my first three fights, I paid money to fight because medicals were more money than I got paid for the fight itself. I was training with guys like Don Fry, Joe Diesel Riggs, Drew Ficketts. These are the like up and comer, the real like started the thing, you know, the BJ Penns, the Randy Couture's, the Chuck Liddell's. These are the guys that I grew up watching. And in that time, you didn't, we were considered human cockfighters. That's what they called us in the political world. And as that, you know, matured and the sport matured, it created a space for it to be what it is now, which is now it looks like a completely different landscape, which I know you know because you've been there through the whole progress. But we're talking about the progress started with TV. It started with, you know, you went from Spike to Versus to Fox to ESPN to now. And in that TV journey, I really watched the whole sport explode. I've been able to get to be part of it. But I was in the era before it was cool to do it. It was actually, you were considered an outcast to be a professional fighter. And I kind of kept it very silent. And I needed to keep my job. So I'd be going and fighting on the weekends and walking into work on Monday with black and blue. And sometimes they send me home. And sometimes I'd ask to have to go be in the back of the storage and just do storage work for the day until my face healed up because I couldn't do customer service. This is the world. It still exists. But back then, it was illegal. So you kept it down. Yeah. You kept it down. It wasn't a bragging topic. You just kind of did the thing on the weekend and came home. So yeah, I was in it when it was just fun to fight. I did it because I enjoyed fighting it, and that's what I am. So it's not like that's going to change just because I'm not competing in the competition pool anymore. I'll still be helping out at the Mexico City PI with Eric Del Fierro. As my coach. He's running that out there. He's doing amazing things. They're building mixed martial arts in Mexico really fast, and it's fun to watch. And I'll still contribute where I can in the sport outside where guys will have me, where people will have me.
Totally. How's the shoulder doing and everything? I know you kind of had to get another surgery after, you know, that led to pulling out of that fight. Everything coming along as you'd hoped as far as the recovery?
Yeah, shoulder surgery was pretty crazy because, you know, they said the MRI didn't do much justice when they got in there. It was completely just not very good at all, like completely thrashed. So I was about 70% stronger on my left side than my right side, and I'm a dominant right hand fighter. So I was going in there almost with one arm. I was on borrowed time with it. Needed to be fixed. I got it fixed. I'm glad everything's reconnected and should be fine after this one. I'll be okay. I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. And what's your next assignment here? Is obviously not on the booth for 316 this weekend. That's Rogan, DC, and Anik. But what do they have you tabbed for coming up?
I'll do Atlanta. I'll be in Atlanta. Yeah. I'll be out on that fight. So that'll be cool. That's 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great card, too. Very interesting main event with Usman and Buckley.
Yes. Those guys are animals. I love watching them fight, both of them. I mean, Usman's been on top. He did great. He had a crazy reign. And then Buckley's just the way that he finishes people is always spectacular. Like the way he finished Wonderboy, and obviously that spinning heel kick that he landed. I mean, you're not going to miss out watching that fight. Those guys are two absolute monsters.
Yeah, it's fascinating. June is so good. Two pay-per-views, four title fights for the UFC, so much going on. But obviously, it starts on Saturday with UFC 316. And of course, the reason we had to have you here, Dom, it is the bantamweight title on the line in the main event. Merab Dvalishvili going for defense number two against Sean O'Malley, who's trying to get that title back. I want to start on Sean because I feel like he's kind of the prominent question mark leading into this fight. I guess the first thing I want like your take on is, you know, Sean says he had the labrum issue going into the first fight. He got surgery afterwards, so I think that like shows that, you know, it was a legitimate thing. But when you look at that first fight and hear that he was, you know, only says he did a couple of weeks of grappling, everything was so refined, what can you take away from that knowledge and bring it into the second fight? And also, like, as you look at the first one, knowing that maybe that wasn't the best version of Sean O'Malley.
Well, I think it's a good education for the fans to understand what it's like to be champion in this sport. You're going into these fights injured. You just are most of the time. I mean, I definitely did. My loss after not losing for 10 years, I was a wreck. Both my feet, I was crawling to hot baths to get my feet to work. I had to wear shoes the whole camp. My shoulder was the beginning of my shoulder issues. And you're going into title fights, multi-million dollar title fights, filling up stadiums, and nobody knows how broken you are, but you get to do it. And that's what Sean O'Malley showed you in that fight. He went the whole distance with Merab. And the big thing is, it's not about that night, because that's honestly the easy part. It's you got to get through the camp, the 12-week camp, or however long your camp is, with the injuries themselves that don't go away. They get more acute usually as you continue to train on them. And so there's this weird balance of having injuries where you're like, okay, I can make these acute by training correctly and then show up to the fight completely wrecked, or I can just bring training down a little notch and then keep my injuries not acute. They're just there, but I show up to the fight and I'm fresh. I can either show up more fresh or more beat up. But the problem is now my cardio might not have got pushed exactly the way it needed to. Maybe I couldn't do as much, as he said, as many wrestling rounds as I needed to. And it's not because he can't, it's because you have to keep the injuries from taking over the whole spectrum of things. So there's a weird balance you end up playing as a champion with all these injuries. Like, I guarantee if you talk to Usman, I guarantee if you talk to Stylebender, which he did, he's going through these fights with very similar things that O'Malley's talking about, and winning fights, broken hands, that shoot, you know, you shoot those with cortisone. I've done that, 2010 against Brian Bowles and Benavidez and Demetrius Johnson. These guys that I fought with broken hands, you know, this is just part of it, right? So it's an education to me for the fans to see that this is how we all go into the fight. And these are the intangibles that we don't know a lot of the time. Yeah. And I think it made a difference in that first fight. Now, let's say he's healthy in this fight. He's going to have a completely different camp. And the completely different camp shows a completely different wrinkle of him. And that's cool. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting to me to see how that goes. He always has the power and the style to knock out Merab. Merab knows that. Mm-hmm. I've commented on this on, posts on Hot Takes with Merab and O'Malley. And, yeah, you know, he knows he can get knocked out by O'Malley. And we've seen him do it to Aljo. And if Merab gets caught reaching at all over that lead leg, that's where O'Malley's going to really make him pay. So there's a lot of fundamental challenges for Merab with the short stance and all that. And O'Malley has really good footwork. He's really rangy. He's good at pulling you side to side into power shots. So this is a fun fight. I like it. I don't see anything wrong with it. You know, some people are saying, oh, it could have been another fight, but it also keeps the story going for Merab, you know, like the stories are good. I've got a lot of rematches, and it says a lot about Merab too, because to give the guy another shot too. So it's like, you're giving O'Malley another shot to try to fight you and make some adjustments. And it's not an easy fight, no matter what anybody says, but it's also probably not the hardest fight in the division at the same time.
Sure.
But if we're talking about marketing, right, we're talking about filling up a big room of people. Yeah, you want to see that fight. So I'm happy with it.
Yeah, me too. I thought, you know, no issues with the matchmaking. Like, there's not some other guy out there that's getting screwed over that's like super, you know, should have been the next one. It's just the only issue or concern I have is, you know, if Sean loses again, it puts him in a very difficult spot in the division. He's probably not getting a third fight unless Merab loses the belt. So that's more so the risk. You know, Sean's this big star for the UFC, and then you have him on two losses. That's just a tricky place to be in. We've seen it many times with many different fighters in different divisions.
Yeah, and that's, again, the education of the sport is like, okay, this is the things that everybody talked about on O'Malley's rise. He got, you know, a really good rise. He put together a sick highlight reel. Okay, now you're in the top five. Let's see if that style sustains itself for an entire career and you stay in the top five, you stay in the top 10, you stay champion. How long? Like, that's when your style presents itself, in my opinion, as a champion. Yeah. Like, your style presents itself in how long it can be preserved before people adjust to it. And then you can't really, you know, they've adjusted. Once people start to adjust, it's hard. And I think people are starting to adjust to what O'Malley's doing, you know, because they're having hours of film on him now. Mm-hmm. That's what's hard.
Yeah, very hard. And it's so interesting too, because, like, you know, we talked about the injury. He could have left the fight and be like, you know, that was the thing that caused that, and maybe left it all to that. But it seems like he's changed everything in the lead up to this camp. Like, stopped smoking weed, he's not partying, he's like cutting out video games, all these different things in his life. He's talking about like all these radical changes. I saw a quote this morning where he was like, I was too attached to sugar, too attached to this character, whatever that means. But, like, I don't know, these are serious radical changes. And then what if it doesn't go your way? How do you digest something like that when you think you've made every single fix? And then even if that's still not enough, I wonder how he would take that.
That's the good question. And now you're talking about, again, the education of fans get to see a youngster, like a young rising star champion, up and down the roller coaster, what it looks like. And number one, the transformation that happens. I mean, you look at me as a in 2007 against Uriah Faber, and then you talk to me now, I'm not the same person after 20 plus fights. You just, the fights transform you alone, much less life outside of the fight world that's also transforming you at the same time. So you're also being watched at all times. So yeah, there's a lot of things. I'm glad to hear that for O'Malley, because that's a, from my experience, that is a more sustainable lifestyle for a long period of time to stay in the top five and the top 10, from my experience, than the latter. Not to say it can't be done, right? Not to say that. And there's no right way to do this either. But that's what's beautiful about the sport. People do it all the ways. There's no right or wrong way. And you can just keep winning. As long as you're winning, people love you. So it's fun to watch everybody's different styles of getting to the top. And like you said, what if I did everything right, and then all of a sudden now I go out there and lose again? Well, what's the difference? You lost when you were doing everything wrong in your mind, right, the first time. Now you've lost when you've done everything right in your mind the second time. So it's now you've got, if you're a champion, like if I'm in that situation, it's like, okay, now I've got a layout to take responsibility and see how do I make the next shift of transformation from that, because I've got both ends of the spectrum to look at what worked better, what didn't.
Even if you know, if he's happy with you, like if he stands up there, of course, you know, there's your very famous post-fight interview and, you know, lost the title and, you know, you're taking it and saying basically like, if he's happy and thinks this changes have made him a better man, I guess the result isn't, you know, ultimately the most important thing in that regard. So as you kind of said there, these are probably better for his overall life. So hard to rag on him too much, but it's, yeah, it's just interesting to see all these radical changes and how it could impact the fight. Cause there's just so many question marks around Sean O'Malley here. And it seems like he's having something of a crisis of what he wants his image to be a little bit.
Yeah, see, I don't see it as a crisis at all. I see it as a realization. I think he's realizing who he is and that he's not the latter, which is the ego. I mean, you hear this a lot. You got an ego and you got the self. And you don't hear people talk about it a lot because it's a profound depth. But when you're fighting at this level, you got to start working through things in your mind. And then you have surgery and you're stuck in bed and you can't move your leg. Guess where you go? In. There's nowhere else to go. You can't put your energy here. You can't go to a club. You can't, you're locked in, man. You're locked in. So I promise you that injury, that surgery, the loss, it kind of put him in a little bit. And when you start looking at it, you're like, man, was I, what, who is Sugar? What person is that? Who is Sean O'Malley? What person is that? Are they separate? Are they the same? What do I use? They're both important. How do I use one or the other? What do I use one for? Which one do I need in which atmosphere? What works the best, not what's wrong or right, but what works the best. These are all questions that you move into with your ego when you start asking the questions that you hear in that post that I hear you talking about. And I know exactly where he's at. He's just going through it. He's in his journey and he's in the questions, and that's where the power's at.
Yeah, and we'll see if it raises his level. But I guess as far as, you know, getting the result he wants, this is a statistic I pulled, you know, in rematches in the UFC since 2010, the winner of the first fight wins the second fight 70% of the time. So like, you know what, and this, we know Merab, he's a cardio machine. He's got all the takedowns. Like, we know his assets. What does Sean have to do to win this fight? Does he need to knock him out, in your opinion?
I think what you're, I like what you said too, is like, we'll see if it adds up to the octagon to equate to a win.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly the key, is understanding that those type of things that I was just talking about equate to a life change, not necessarily a fight change. They're two different things. When you build your ego, that's a fight change, because you, I am pure ego when I step into that fight. I'm not Dominic anymore. I'm not the person that you're talking to right now. I turn into who I need to be to make it work in that moment. I have a feeling O'Malley does the same thing on that time. So I like how you said that. How does this equate, and how does this transformation equate into the fight? That is an interesting concept to look at too, that I'm looking forward to seeing. And I do believe that Merab is going to be the favorite, and I do believe he should be the favorite, and I do believe that he's the true champion. It will probably, if I looked at the last fight, it wasn't close to me. Now, we're assuming that because he was hurt, that's why. Well, I'm going to say it's because Merab is nasty, to be honest. Like, he just, he does the right things. He mixes up his striking, his wrestling, very similar to the way I used my style. He uses a similar tactics with the high low, with the shooting at the times he shoots, with the striking the times he strikes. It's a completely different style. I'm not saying the same, but the tactics are similar, and I enjoy watching how he mixes it up and the kind of pace that he's able to keep with changing high low. It's exhausting for guys to keep up with going up and down like this to stuff the shot. You end up moving back the whole time to adjust to it. So you have to have very good lateral movement. And guess who has that? So it's just fun. Yep. And it's just fun on all levels for me. I enjoy talking about it. I enjoy watching Merab. I think he's the favorite and it's going to be cool to watch.
Yeah. What have you made of, I guess, Merab's run here? I'll read a quote from your very good friend, John Anik. I'm not sure if you saw this one. He said this, I believe, yesterday to MMA Junkie Radio. "I do believe Merab Dvalishvili has the status as the greatest bantamweight of all time. And I say this as a man who, if I got married this weekend, Dominic Cruz would be my groomsman."
Yeah, I mean, I think that John Anik knows, you know, he makes media. That's what he knows how to do that. It's my boy. I love that dude. I think I just love to be that the fact that there's even a conversation with me involved. It's not for me to decide something like that. You know, when you think about, I'm not saying it's this level, but when it, as a parallel, you're talking about LeBron and Jordan, right? You're not going to get me to ever. You're never going to convince me ever. Ever, no matter what, under any circumstance, that LeBron's better than Jordan, to me. But then you've got the latter that's going to say the opposite. So what's? I love that there's even a conversation. If there's a conversation, then that's what this thing's about. And you know what? Merab's making a conversation too, and it's good for him. This dude's been through the ladder, man. This dude's had to fight up and down the ladder exactly the same way I did. I had to fight my way through the hardest fights in the division. Multiple rematches before I got my shots. I had to earn every scrap. And I see that similarity in Merab, so I tip my hat to him.
Yeah, he's been great. 12-fight winning streak is unreal. He's beat a lot of former champions. It's always hard to do this. Like, you know, I was there, I was covering the sport in your era. Like people, the COVID fans, the people who have come in recently, they don't know how big those fights you had with Uriah Faber was, the TJ Dillashaw. Like you had to be there to fully understand it. So for me to try to sit there and like, you know, debate with someone who's only maybe watched some of Merab's run or his title fights, it's like, can't do this with you, man.
That's my point. Yeah. You can't. Yeah. They've had the experience with Merab. You've had an experience with me. And it's we all share these experiences in time. And I'm just honored to be part of the conversation with a guy like Merab. Come on.
I will say, though, he does have a chance to separate himself here. He's talking about how he wants to have 4 title defenses this year. Mm-hmm. No champion in UFC history has ever had 3 in more than a calendar year. So if he's able to have that notch on his resume in the record books, that would obviously be huge. And if he gets through a Corey Sandhagen after this, then whoever it may be at the end of the year, like it's going to be a hell of a run.
My point. There's a short list of guys who have had 3 title fight defenses in a calendar year. Title fight defenses. Yeah. I'm one of them. Usman's one of them. Stylebender's one of them. It's not easy to do. So he goes and gets 4. Of course, it's amazing. Let's go. That's what these records are made for. They're made to be broken. And I want to see somebody do these things. This is amazing. Yeah. I love it.
Last one on this fight before we move to the co-main. A lot of talk if Sean O'Malley loses here. People saying we talked about how he'd be trapped. They seem to think there's an exit for him to go up to 145. Do you think he could be competitive there, like title challenger worthy? Could he rise up to that like top 5 at featherweight, or does he need to hang around here at 135?
No, O'Malley can match him up anywhere in 35 or 45, like they did early in his career. You match O'Malley a certain way, you make him look like the star he is. Yeah. You match him another way, he gets held down.
Yep. We shall see. This is a fascinating fight, honestly. And on the other side, the women's side of bantamweight in the co-main event, finally, we're getting a Kayla Harrison title shot. This has been talked about since she was in PFL. She's done her thing, 2 wins in the UFC. Juliana Pena, always underestimated. I think she's one of the biggest betting underdogs as a defending champion we've seen in a very long time. So it's an uphill climb here. I don't know. What do you make of this? Do you feel like this is, you know, kind of the coronation of Kayla Harrison, or are we not giving Juliana Pena her respect in her ability to win this fight?
I mean, both things can be true at the same time. Yep. I think we could give Juliana Pena some respect because she's done it. And I think that what you got to look at, if you're looking at it from my perspective, is meanness, just pure, real, actual, mean person. And the women's division does really well. And Juliana Pena is mean. She can be absolutely just a mean person to other women. I've seen it. She's tough. She doesn't give a rip. That goes a very long way. It just does. I mean, it doesn't do the job, but it does a long way. And she has that. Now, Kayla Harrison is mean, but in a sporty way. She's going to get the job done with the physicality. But the whole, like, just actually being, like, just rooted from meanness, I feel like Juliana is better at that piece. And that can help her in this fight. But Kayla Harrison's an absolute unit. I mean, she's just yoked up. She's strong. She's a freak with cardio. She's in amazing cardio shape for her size. Usually somebody that buff kind of gasses out a little bit. She doesn't really gas out. She just keeps on it. And she's got that Olympic level of judo, which makes her hips and her natural movements in the clinch, which is where Juliana enjoys to be. It makes her elite in that area, literally in the world for women. So that makes it tougher for Juliana, in my opinion. Juliana's going to have to really focus on low level shots under the hips, which is not her number one thing. Or getting to front headlocks, which is breaking the posture of Kayla Harrison, which if you've seen Kayla Harrison, good luck breaking her posture. You know what I mean? Like, so you got to shoot and you got to strike. And let's see if the transformation has happened for Juliana as well. But the meanness, man, and the nonstop forward pressure and the being able to take a shot and the being able to go anyways and the being able to bleed and not care and all that, like, and experience and great jujitsu in tough positions, like, Juliana will submit you if it gets into a real grimy, nasty, ugly, horrible looking fight. I start to see it go. I could go to Juliana. That's where she thrives. That's where she gets these little submissions. That's where she gets these little pot shot elbows in. And I think it's going to be a competitive match.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I spent like 4 days at American Top Team in April doing like a little mini documentary on Kayla. And like, holy shit, that woman works hard. Like, first person in, last person out in the gym. You're watching her, you know, sparring with ranked male UFC fighters in multiple weight classes. Like, she's insanely, you know, workhorse. That's why she's a two-time Olympic gold medalist, obviously, and has got this far. But I guess, you know, the weight cut is obviously the huge question, right? She's not made 135 even. She's only hit 136. She'll have to be there for this championship fight. And when I saw her, she said, everything is ahead of schedule. She's like, I have a cheat day this week, like my only one of the month. It's all going great. But as I'm sure you know, you can plan every single thing perfectly, but you don't know how your body is going to react when you get down to that final pound, right?
For me, I don't give a rip. Like, I think, and I would say she believes that way too. You could tell she's so disciplined. She's so locked in. When you're as disciplined and locked in as you're talking about, she just said to you, I'm the same way. When I make a weight and I know I'm going to make it, it is impossible for me to miss it. I will not miss the weight. I would literally lay in there and melt to death before I miss that weight, because I know physically my body can do it. And if I didn't, it's just the way it is. It's just mental toughness at that point. And can you handle
it? I guess what about the bounce back, right? That's what everyone's wondering. If she does, like, I'm sure she'll do everything she has to be 135 on Friday. But the question is, how does that affect her come Saturday night?
The discipline. And that's what I love about this. People go, that's cheating. Or people say, why do we have weight cuts in the sport? Well, this is why, because discipline wins weight cuts. And having everything dialed in. And it doesn't make everything perfect, because there's obviously a human body, a lot of weird things can happen. You can get sick, all this stuff, but discipline really can really, that's what gets you through the weight cut. And the better disciplined athlete usually makes it through the weight cut less, with more muscle, more size, more strength, more stamina, and less beat down. And that's just somebody who knows how to use the system and knows how to be disciplined and knows how to exert, you know, the right way, not too much, and knows how to eat the right things and not break diet, not eat sugar, not eat the wrong things at the wrong time. Like, it's a actual perfect science. And the athlete who's better at that, that adds to the championship mentality. That adds to the gift that raises the level of the champions that are to come. When somebody can be that disciplined and that strong and that big and use it and it not ruin them and their performance. Can that happen? 100%. Of course, she could come in too big, lose too much weight, and have nothing left. But that's why this fight's fun because it's like, okay, that's where Juliana can get ahead. And there's a chance because she's not as big, she can have more energy maybe early or in the later rounds. And that's why this is a gamble. That's why it's a gamble to cut weight. That's why it's a gamble not to cut weight. And that's why there's a bet to be made on the whole thing from beginning to end.
Yeah, it's many checks and balances to try to lead to the perfect performance in that octagon.
Exactly.
Last storyline for UFC 316, back to the men's bantamweight division. Highly anticipated debut of former Bellator champion Patchy Mix fighting Mario Bautista. Man, like, what are you excited for Patchy Mix? Is this someone you've been waiting to see kind of get these type of fights in the UFC for a while now? And I guess, what do you think this guy can do here?
Well, I think he's going to find out the level he's at, because Bautista is real. I mean, he just beat Aldo, and Aldo is still one of the best ever. You know, he's just defensively really good. And what Bautista did was he used so much offense and so much different looks that it kind of kept Aldo on the back foot and kept him from throwing. Now, that's the amount of offense this guy has and the amount of looks and the amount of cardio, because he also trains in elevation, if I remember right, too.
I believe so, yeah.
So that adds. And Patchy Mix, I don't know much because of the other shows. It's important that I watch the UFC guys and stick with the divisions, you know. So when I go back and watch his fights, he grapples a lot. He's got a nasty guillotine. Like, he's choked a lot of people out with these guillotines. I don't know if you can get away with guillotines as easy against a Bautista as you can in these other shows. I just don't know. Yeah. But that's why this is fun too, because Patchy Mix is a complete question mark. Like, he's just, we don't know how great he is, and this fight will show, because Bautista is one of the toughest guys in the division. But it says a lot about Patchy Mix and how good he knows he is. Because to take that fight, that's not a lot of people know Bautista, and not a lot of people, you know, probably would have taken that fight. But I think Patchy's a beast. When I watch his fight, he's a freaking beast. But like I said, you see guys like that, and then they get to the UFC, and you're like, I don't know what it is. It might be the level of the athletes they're competing against, or it might just be the whole shebang, the whole atmosphere, the whole, okay, this was my dream, and I'm here. I don't know, but Patchy's a champ, so I'm going to go ahead and assume that he handles it flawlessly, and we're going to see a champion fighting Bautista, and he can get the job done. If he'd do his thing. He should be able to hold down Bautista, take his back, throw a body triangle in, maybe strangle him with a rear naked choke, or just keep taking him down, rinse and repeat, and keeping him there. We'll see.
Bautista. Yeah, I'm really fascinated. Yeah, like, this guy is young. He's in his prime. This isn't Michael Chandler or Patricio Pitbull or Michael Page coming over, who are kind of, you know, like, had their best days probably already in Bellator. This guy was still the champion and obviously, yeah, at the top of his game. So we'll see what he can do. And it's right there. Title fight in the main event. Like, UFC could not have given him a better opportunity to make his presence known here.
He's an exciting prospect in the division. That's what I can say. Definitely. No question.
Very okay, Dominic, before I let you go here, this is the start, as I say, off the top of a very big summer for the UFC. I want to ask about two other fights, your takes on them. Obviously, the title fight at the end of the month, Ilya Topuria and Charles Oliveira. I guess, what are your expectations for Ilya at 55 in this fight? And then, of course, we know Charles, one of the greatest beasts in UFC history.
I like Ilya in this fight. He gets right in the chest, and the boxing work that he does, high low to the body and to the head, really fits well in the style against Oliveira, because Oliveira sits very high and tall, and he counts on you running into knees coming up the middle from his clinch when you put your head in his chest, because he knows you're going to put your head in his chest, because this is where guys beat him, is being right here and boxing him. And so he's learned to do this when you get there, and he's short, he's taller than everybody. And so once he gets here, he's got elbows and knees up the top. Well, Ilya's going to know that. That's a not a, too much of a crazy adjustment. And so I think that the boxing is going to be tough for Oliveira, because it's going to push him back. And that's just how I see it. But as for the fight itself, like, obviously it's going to be competitive. Oliveira is one of the best. I think that Topuria is going to carry the weight well. I think he was probably cutting pretty hard to make 45. But I do think Oliveira will have a huge, huge height and range advantage. And when you saw Jai Herbert versus Ilia Topuria, he dropped Topuria with a left high kick from a southpaw stance. Oliveira, same frame, same skill sets, same technical abilities, more experience. It's not like it can't happen. It's been seen. So fun. Again, more you don't know what's going to happen, but it's like, all right, if these guys fought 10 times, who do you see winning the most? You know, that's how you got to keep fights if you're me.
Yeah, and then last one, I think my personal most anticipated fight of the summer, I don't know about you, but at UFC 319, return to Chicago, we will finally get Dricus du Plessis and Khamzat Chimaev. Man, I think everyone is stoked for this fight. What's your, I guess, excitement level? And just like, I don't know, I'd love to hear you even just try to break this down, because it seems like no one knows what the hell these guys are going to do in there.
No, come on, man. It's not that hard. The GDP just uses his footwork and he strikes on the outside and he's going to sprawl and brawl. And Khamzat's going to try to do that as long as he can, but he's going to force takedowns. His striking will be better. His kicks he'll have to use his kicks, Khamzat, and to close the distance because of the footwork and all over the place. Kick, box, wrestle. And that's how Khamzat can close the distance on a moving, unorthodox DDP. DDP, just do what DDP does. Keep doing. Don't change a thing. Keep fighting how he's fighting. Stuff the takedowns. Keep it on the outside. And make your opponent uncomfortable the whole time. And he if he doesn't get the knockout with the heavy damage that he creates because he hits hard naturally, if he doesn't get the knockout in that mix, he has the style to win a decision, if not a knockout. So he fights to win the decision, but usually gets the knockout. So he always, to me, DDP covers two bases at the same time. And that's what makes his style, why he's the champion, why he keeps defending. He's not just trying to knock you out and then that's it. He's not just trying to win a decision and that's it. He's doing them both at the same time. And if he doesn't get one, he gets the other. And when you're talking about Khamzat, he's got to take you down, hold you down, choke you, you know, completely bully you. He's never not bullied somebody other than Gilbert Burns. And do I think that GDP can fight as good as Gilbert Burns?
Yes.
So, okay. And that's not to say that I've seen Khamzat improve and get much better over this time. And from his last fight, he looked like an absolute incredible specimen, right? So maybe the weight adage really improved his game as well, I think. And that's another fun wrinkle in it, is how much better is Khamzat at this weight? And we want to see a guy like that go against DDP, because DDP hasn't been challenged in his grappling at like he will be at that level. Sign me up. I'm there. Let's watch tomorrow.
What a fight. What a summer slate the UFC has coming up with all these title fights. You'll definitely be around, Dominic. This delivered as well as I thought it would. I wanted, you know, your insight. We had Chael Sonnen on last week, and, you know, he likes to take a different approach with his analysis. We wanted something a little more technical here, and especially as we honor my good friend Jordan Breen with this episode here, Dominic. So I really appreciate you coming on, making your debut. Any last words before I cut to break and let you go?
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, and all the love to the fans. Appreciate you guys.
All right. Thank you, Dominic. I'm going to take a quick break and be back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Dominic for his time. Amazing insight, amazing perspective. That was just great stuff. How could you ask for any more to get you ready for these title fights at UFC 316? How do you guys think they're going to go? Please leave comments, subscribe, like, everything you can do to show support to this program as we keep pushing forward. And this one dedicated to Jordan. We'll have another show, I think, with some people from his past, some people he worked with in the industry, hopefully next week, really giving him the honor and the distinction he deserves, because his contributions to the sport should not be forgotten. His insights and just the unique perspective and personality he brought was one of a kind. So thank you for staying with us through this rough show. Thank you for Kamikaze Abi Subban for producing, as always. And until next week, we'll see you back here by the Bonfire. It's the Jordan Breen Show. Shut up and listen. Choke another host straight into submission. Got him covering the mugs like Muslim women. Flooding the phone lines, calling the Mounties for killer airwaves.